Case number 13-1035, National Environmental Development Association's Clean Air Project Petitioner versus Environmental Protection Agency. Mr. Gard for the petitioner, Ms. Smazniak for the respondent.
Thank you, Judge Tatel. Judge Tatel, and may it please the court. It is plain on its face that the summit directive at issue in this case does not assure uniformity. In fact, it does just the opposite. It instructs the regional offices to apply different permitting standards to different parts of the country.
You mean an instruction to continue to do what they'd always been doing, except with respect to the Sixth Circuit?
Well, Your Honor, we would take issue with that, but I think it raises a key point.
That's what it does, doesn't it?
Well, we would take issue with the notion that the EPA's policy was as consistent as they say. But I think the key point for us is in terms of what the summit directive does in place of what the regime would have been if it would not have been issued. It does two things, Your Honor. First of all, it removes the discretion that the regional offices otherwise would have had to follow the Sixth Circuit's decision in summit. And importantly, essentially eliminates the obligation of the regional offices to comply with the uniformity mandate in the EPA's own rules and in the statutes.
What's your redress? If you win, what are you thinking you should win?
So what we would ask you to do, Your Honors, is vacate the summit directive, either mm-hmm. because it contravenes that mandate or because they don't even attempt to explain how it applies with it. And then we would go back, and the agency would have several options. It would no longer have the option to seek Supreme Court review, which would have been one of the ways that it could have assured uniformity. But it could have done what the Sixth Circuit suggested, which has gone back to the drawing board and devise a national rule on the meaning of adjacent.
Why didn't you file a petition for rulemaking?
Well, Your Honor, because we saw this directive that was issued just...
Well, but I mean, the redress leaves us in a total mess because they can continue to follow exactly what they say they're going to do now, just like the NLRB and other agencies are not going to let the First Circuit in decide what the national law should be. Is that what you're suggesting, that they have to follow the Sixth Circuit?
They had a choice, Your Honor.
No, answer me. Do they have to follow the Sixth Circuit?
The agency's position.
Your position.
Our position is no, they did not, Your Honor.
They do not.
They could have, as the agency suggests in its brief, taken the position of non-acquiescence, even in the Sixth Circuit. But put that aside.
I don't want to put that aside because I'm really trying to figure that out. That's terribly important because the notion that the First Circuit in decides this seems very strange to me in light of my experience on this court.
And I would agree with you, Your Honor. What I would say is that the Clean Air Act is quite distinct insofar as it poses this uniformity mandate. It's unique.
Yeah, I understand. I understand what you're saying about the uniformity mandate, but I'm still perplexed over how we handle First Circuit in, and the agency has the responsibility to decide what, at least in the first instance, what the statute means.
I mean, this court has said, going back several decades in a case called Johnson versus United States Railroad Retirement Board, that the obvious way to assure uniformity when a circuit rules and the agency disagrees is either to seek Supreme Court review,
right.
Seek congressional legislation,
yeah.
Or in this case, the Sixth Circuit gave it the option or suggested that it would go back and actually engage in rulemaking. Beyond that...
Yeah, but all of those seem to suggest that the Sixth Circuit is now the goal model. That's a really perplexing notion. I don't think that's what we've ever meant to say. Your premise seems to be the Sixth Circuit has spoken, and that really is the standard because there is this uniformity requirement. I just don't understand why you didn't file a petition for rulemaking.
Well, Your Honor, we could have. But what the agency acted promptly and issued this unheard of, in our experience, directive to apply these two different permitting regimes. And I think, again, if you take that away, then what you would have had of the situation, even if the agency had acquiesced within the circuit, mm-hmm. you would have had a regime in which our members would have been free to go to the other.
Suppose they did nothing.
Suppose they did nothing.
Nothing meaning they don't say anything.
Sure.
They just all know. Everyone assumes the Sixth Circuit's an oddball. We're not acquiescing. No, you can't find any piece of paper that says it, but that's what they're doing. What situation are we in now?
At a minimum, Your Honor, our members in the other regions would be able to go there and say, you should follow the summit decision of the Sixth Circuit. and the regional offices in considering that, as well as state permitting authorities that would, in effect, are bound by this directive, wouldn't be under the directive from the headquarters in Washington.
But they've got regulations that they would be subject to.
There's no express regulation.
But they have those regulations, and they know what they've always been construed to mean. So a regional director doesn't have the authority to say, I'm going to ignore the agency's regulations and the interpretations supporting it because I like what the Sixth Circuit said.
Counsel, isn't it key to your argument that the benchmark for injury, and actually all the other procedural issues, I think, flow from this, the benchmark is not the status quo ante. The benchmark is what the agency ought to have done. And you have an argument, a number of arguments, as to what they ought to have done in order to adhere to the uniformity requirement.
Absolutely.
And they may or may not be winners, but whether they're winners or not does not affect jurisdiction.
No, absolutely. And to be clear, the agency could have done a number of things. It could have sought Supreme Court review. It could have gone back and actually devised a rule to cover the meaning of adjacent. It could have sought a legislative fix. It could have acquiesced within the Sixth Circuit and followed that nationally, or it could have said we're not going to acquiesce at all. And Judge Edwards,
so the difference would be the mistake they made, the announcement that they should have issued was, we're not acquiescing.
No, we're not saying that they had to do that, Your Honor. But
no, not had to. I'm just trying to say, is your case now different? Had they done that, had they followed that option, they read the Sixth Circuit, and they send out an announcement saying, we're not acquiescing, then they're okay.
Then we wouldn't be here, Your Honor, if they just said, that would be a uniform position. Our position is...
Now they know this is easy for them, because if you win, they've won. Because all they're going to do is go back and say, oh, the paper we sent out, that was a mistake.
But
what we meant to say was we're not acquiescing, and the case is over.
And I think, Your Honor, what's different from our members' perspective, and this is critical, is we wouldn't be under this regime where the head office in Washington had directed all the regional offices to comply with these separate permit requirements.
All right, you're assuming, I don't mean to interrupt, but I really, because I'll forget them. While these questions are bubbling up. So you're assuming something that I find surprising because I don't believe it. You're assuming that these regional directors really are free, in fact. If they just say we're not acquiescing, these regional directors are really free to kind of do as they see fit. I don't believe that in a minute. But if that's your assumption, that's okay. That's interesting to me.
Well, I think, and maybe this will help provide some backdrop to that assumption, Your Honor. One is we're not dealing with a situation where there's a clear rule on point that says we interpret adjacent to mean functional interrelatedness. In fact, the regulatory landscape is much more muddled than that. And the Sixth Circuit decision in Summit lays out the many contradictory statements that the agency has made on this. Second, if you look at the petition for rulemaking, which is appended to the affidavit to our brief involving the Florida River and Colorado, there, the environmental group that brought that petition specifically acknowledged their complaint was that the region had not imposed this functional interrelatedness test. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe why we're coming at it from this different perspectives is we don't think the world was nearly as settled as the...
No, I'm just very surprised that you are very comfortable with a result which is an announcement we're not acquiescing.
Well, we don't like that.
You don't like it, but but you admit you don't have a case if that's what they had said.
Well, our case here today on the uniformity mandate, if they had just said, my way or the highway, it doesn't matter in the Sixth Circuit, and agencies have done that.
Right.
We wouldn't like that at all, but we wouldn't be here complaining about a directive that complies to different permitting regimes. And I think that's really what's unique about this.
One more thing, you also think that the agency could have rewritten its regulation so as to clearly build the functional interrelationship test into it, right?
Well,
that would have been one of its. I mean, you might have challenged it, but that's another way it could have provided uniformity, right?
Yes, Your Honor, and if I could just qualify a little bit. I mean, obviously, we agree with the Sixth Circuit on the merits, which isn't before
this
court.
But that was an interpretation of the regulation.
Right.
If they rewrote the regulation to make it clear that the functional interrelationship test was part of the definition of source, that's another way they could have provided uniformity. correct?
Yes, they could have provided uniformity by going back and devising the rule that they wished, and that would have been a national uniform rule. And really, that is the more desirable outcome. The Clean Air Act, Congress dealt with this in different ways. One, it did provide a venue provision to direct most national disputes to this court, which we think just reinforces the notion that Congress was concerned about an even playing field out there. It's something that the agency itself has recognized. We quote in the JA, it's at page 48 of the JA, where the EPA has recognized, quote, congressional concerns that different permitting requirements in different parts of the country could lead to inequitable location of the same some industries. And that's the competitive concern that Congress was concerned about. So one way was to address it was the venue provision directing most national disputes to this court. It was true that you could have disputes in the regional circuits, but I think the assumption was that those would tend to be fact-specific applications of rules and wouldn't present the national issues that happened to arise in this case. Historically, as far as we can tell, the administrative practice of the EPA has been to go along with decisions of the circuits. We've cited a law review article on that. We've cited an article.
It's generally considered very weak authority here.
Well, and fair enough, Your Honor, but I think we're trying to get the playing field here. And our point is, and the agency has come up with one discrete example, too, which I don't think is much more persuasive, at least in terms of its fulsomeness. But I think although this position might strike the court odd, given the broad run of statutes and statutory schemes it implements, what's really unusual in this case is the directive under the Clean Air Act, one which we're not aware of any similar directive, and it really is quite unique. And setting that directive aside, either because it directly contravenes the agency's own rules in the statute, or because the agency didn't even attempt to explain how its decision to impose these conflicting requirements was consistent with the uniformity requirement. At a bare minimum, we think that the APA required it to do that. One of the hallmarks of arbitrary decision-making is the failure to recognize the relevant considerations. The Supreme Court said that in the State Farm case. Here, there's no reference even to the uniformity mandate. Maybe the agency thinks the uniformity mandate doesn't make sense. Maybe it thinks it has more leeway in a situation where it might try to develop a circuit conflict. Maybe it thought that was the best way to get to the Supreme Court and resolve this. But at a bare minimum, it ought to be required to recognize its own rules establishing this uniformity requirement and to explain why it doesn't think it comes into play here. And look at those rules. Those rules cover precisely the situation here. They talk about the concern that the regional offices be in the position to implement and enforce the act in a uniform manner. They specifically apply to the headquarters in Washington. That's in 56.2B, where they say that this obligation applies to the headquarters as well. And so then what do you have here? You have this remarkable rule which actually instructs the regional offices to apply two different permitting regimes going forward and says, oh, by the way, tell this to the state permitting authorities and tell this to potential permit applicants. That's exactly what Congress did not want to happen. It violates the statute. It violates the regulation. And we would ask this court to set it aside and at a minimum tell the agency to go back and explain in a reasoned way how it can square the two.
Thank you. No question.
Thank you.
Your Honor, may it please the Court, my name is Kim Smasnak from the Department of Justice, and with me at counsel's table is Michael Horwitz from the Environmental Protection Agency. Now, in 2012, the Sixth Circuit held that EPA's application of the regulatory definition of a stationary source applied to a specific sweetening plant in Michigan was arbitrary and capricious. Less than 2 months later, EPA issued the memorandum that issued here, which simply informed its regional officers of that decision and indicated that EPA would continue to apply its practice of applying the definition of a stationary source in the same manner as it had previously.
And it told
Except in the Sixth Circuit.
Except in the Sixth Circuit.
So that isn't the way it's always done. Right. That isn't the way it's always done.
Pardon me,
I said that isn't the way it's always done it. In other words, when they said we're going to apply the standard as we've always done it, that's not accurate because the standard was always applied nationally.
At the point at which the memorandum has been issued,
yeah,
the some decision has come down and EPA is complying with the Sixth Circuit. Now, the view is that EPA took a separate decision in terms of acquiescing to the Sixth Circuit by issuing that memorandum. We don't view that as a separate agency action. The idea that compliance with a circuit's decision is separately reviewable, a final determination, we would reject that. Now, this memorandum was inherently an explanatory memorandum. It had no legal effects. And because it does not have any legal effect, it doesn't change the permitting authority's discretion.
Doesn't it bind the regional offices?
It doesn't.
And doesn't it bind the regional offices and bind parties engaged in permitting under the supervision of those regional offices?
The effect of the memorandum was simply to keep in place the same discretion
you are making the assumption that I raised earlier, and that is assuming that the baseline is the past. The baseline isn't the past. The baseline is the difference between what the agency did and what the plaintiff here, petitioner, says it ought to have done. Okay? Unless you accept that, the whole argument's going to be a waste of time.
And I think that the answer is, as Judge Edwards pointed out, is that if EPA had issued nothing, the status quo would be that EPA would comply with the decision in the Sixth
Except
Circuit.
Except the parties would at least have had the chance to argue to the regional authorities that they want to obey the Sixth Circuit.
That's not the case, because that would be inconsistent with EPA's practice of applying its regulation. The Sixth Circuit's reading of the regulation is inconsistent with 30 decades of EPA practice. And if the approach really is about...
I'm sorry, just tell me what... Are you saying that whenever the EPA loses a case in a circuit, its invariable practice is to adhere to that decision in the circuit, but pay no attention to it elsewhere?
No,
because that's the practice that you've got to invoke, not simply the practice of what it did for 30 years before the Sixth Circuit.
And let me clarify. So I'm not making any statement as to EPA's having adopted a particular practice in responding to adverse decisions.
Okay.
There's no set official practice as to that. EPA evolves that as the circumstances require.
So why would not parties have had a chance to argue in the region, outside the Sixth Circuit, that the Sixth Circuit decision is good law and you ought to step in line?
So, for example, in the other circuits...
And invoking, incidentally, the uniformity argument.
In the other circuits, the regional administrators of the Act are constrained in EPA's longstanding reading of its regulatory definition. Now, the Sixth Circuit thought that that was not the appropriate way to read it.
You've given contradictory answers, because you said the EPA has no practice at all with respect to its approach to a decision by one circuit invalidating an interpretation. And now you say that it's practically the same sentence. You say the regional authorities, under longstanding practice, absolutely had to disregard that. I don't get it.
I see. Okay. So, to the extent that there is an option for administrators to adopt the Sixth Circuit's view of the best reading of that act, in the contradiction of where the EPA or headquarters view of it. And so in answer to your question, no, there is not an official position that the administrators, regional administrators, must or cannot apply that.
Really?
Thanks to the memorandom, there
really?
Is on this
really?
Issue.
Do you know that for sure?
I want her answer.
I know you want the answer.
I don't care what her answer is.
Make sure she understands the question.
If she doesn't, she'll tell me.
I think that I may have.
But are you saying that regional directors are free to interpret the source definition any way they want, regardless of what headquarters says?
No.
Oh, I thought that's what you said.
No. And so if I said that was a misstatement, okay. I apologize.
That's what you were saying.
So could you tell me what constrains
I think my point is that
administrators when there is a circuit decision invalidating an EPA interpretation.
Let me try to clarify. I think I've been confusing the issue, and that is that absent some affirmative step by the administrator, and that's key, there would need to be some official next step. To the extent that the regional administrator would want to diverge from the existing limits on its discretion under the headquarters interpretation and application, longstanding application of the definition here, EPA would have to take some affirmative step to allow those regional administrators. Now, that affirmative...
Why did you issue the memo?
The memo was issued in to immediately inform the regional administrators of the decision.
But you're saying that the EPA background, was... the background norm gave nothing more than what the memo says.
And I think that the way to envision this is that there's a decision that may cause EPA to reflect on its nationwide application of this.
Uh-huh.
It could cause EPA to determine that a new course is necessary.
And it came out.
And the point
way.
No, I think the point is EPA is indicating it has not yet. It's an interim step in that process and is indicating to everyone that it is not yet taking any such affirmative step at this point. It's really a sort of an in-process informative decision.
It did at least stop and reflect as to what the rule would be going forward until such time as the EPA might or might not do something new. And incidentally, interim rules are constantly reviewed in this court.
Let me ask you this. Up until the day before EPA issued the summit memorandum, if this issue, this same question, this definition of source, had come up, say, in California, could the regional director there have followed the Sixth Circuit approach?
Followed the Sixth Circuit in saying that it was prohibited to consider interrelatedness, it could not. It could not have followed the Sixth Circuit. That would be inconsistent with prior practice. And that. So I want to be clear that in applying this definition, that in practice, in applying the Sixth Circuit definition, the outcome of that application could result in the same scope, the same regulatory burden, the same outcome ultimately to the source, as if you're applying it without the Sixth Circuit's prohibition on considering interrelatedness. As a factual matter, in applying these two things, there's simply the difference in the Sixth Circuit is that you cannot consider one factor. But even without the consideration of that factor, we may ultimately have the circumstance that two regional administrators applying these, you know, so-called different standards nonetheless end up with the same result. That is because inherently in applying the definition of a source, these three prongs, each administrator has the discretion to take into account the full context of what the circumstances are. So in some cases, distance may be the pivotal factor in taking into account all of the three criteria, including how those emission points are interrelated, determine...
What was the need for the guidance then? That's what Judge Williams is asking you. Why, if this is understood throughout the agency, I don't know whether you think there's a piece of paper that confirms it. If there is, we'd like to know about it, that regional people understand that they keep following the regulations on the books no matter what a particular circuit court does unless they're instructed otherwise, then why did you have to send anything out?
And I think that this has to do with when there is an adverse decision, there's a point at which it may be the case that EPA decides there's a change in course.
Well,
it's
so our question is, you don't know, then just say that too. But the question is, they didn't decide anything here. Why was there a need to say anything if the norm is the regional director just keeps going the way she or he has been going unless they're instructed otherwise?
And I think that it's... we don't view it as having particular effects, but it was nonetheless informative to give everyone a sense that, look, EPA was reflecting on this process. It still hasn't decided how it's going to apply the summit's decision in the Sixth Circuit. That's all information that's helpful to give in the immediate way. This is within 2 months of the decision that EPA is processing this and indicating that for all these other sources outside, don't worry, in the meantime, this is going to be the same as what you faced as far as permitting burdens going forward. It's going to be the same business you already understand. Now, that's something as a part of an agency communicating that is not, it doesn't have the legal consequences that result in its being final agency action. It's not a ripe action, But nonetheless, it's important to inform the regulatory community and its regional officers.
What do you think? Well, go ahead and finish your sentence.
Well, I was going to move on because I think there's this misunderstanding of the statute as imposing some kind of consistency mandate.
That was going to be my question.
Wonderful. And I think that is simply the statute doesn't bear that reading. Section 301 of the Act, particularly as implemented by EPA's implementing regulations, it merely puts in place certain procedures for assisting the insurance of uniformity among its regional officers. What it does not do is require a substantive outcome of uniformity. And it certainly does not address...
What does that mean?
As in, it doesn't require EPA to seek uniformity in application and implementation of the Act at all costs. Instead, EPA has identified in its regulation particular regulations where there's a concern about inconsistency.
You know, I can understand your position about the statute, if that's all we had. But what about all the agency, what about 56.3 and all the agency statements which make it clear that it's the EPA's policy to make everything clear and uniform throughout the regional offices, and then that applies to headquarters also?
And
the agency has said it many times that they're all in the blue brief. So.
Their agency has not ever spoken to the issue in this case. It's sort of a circuit split. Yes, it's
okay,
never
well,
spoken to.
Why should that make a difference?
Because the Congress has spoken most clearly with respect to judicially created uniformity in Section 307B1 of the Act. Now, Congress there, to the extent that it wanted uniformity in the legal in response to judicial decisions, it really created that mechanism in Section 307.1 by granting exclusive jurisdiction to this court for certain nationally applicable regulations or rules.
Well, maybe 7607 and 7601 kind of work in parallel. They both do the work of ensuring nationwide uniformity, the first with respect to ensuring that major cases come here, and the other telling the agency that, you know, with respect to applying the regulations, they also have to be uniform. They work together to produce that result.
Respectfully, I don't think any of either EPA's general policy statement in its regulation that it seeks to, you know, enhance uniformity or the specific citations in the Federal Register that reference this, any of them have anything other than in improving the actions of EPA's own officers, making those more consistent.
Suppose we didn't agree with you about that. Suppose we interpret the statute as interpreted by the agency as requiring uniformity, including by headquarters. Now, is it still your position that the summit directive is not reviewable?
I think this is an issue of ripeness.
Even though the agency has not,
there is no evidence
issued the summit. It didn't say anything about its uniformity obligation. It didn't acknowledge it, and it didn't explain why it didn't pursue any of the other alternatives, such as revising the regulation.
And I understand, and assuming, although we disagree with it, that the uniformity mandate applies in the way suggested.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, this is an issue that it's not even ripe to be decided. There's not any evidence in the record of how EPA is, in fact, applying this regulation differently in different circuits.
That's not the question. It's a straight legal issue. That is, can EPA adopt a directive that applies one standard in the Sixth Circuit and another standard everywhere else? You don't need any other facts to resolve that question.
And I would say that that it does.
What
it
do we
depends
need?
Upon whether or not EPA. So, you know, EPA decides to read the second factor first instead of the first. Like, it changes the order in which it reads them. If that has no regulatory impact, that's meaningless. The difference in application of its definition is meaningless if it doesn't result in different burdens.
See, the problem is your regulations, I'm looking at them now, they really do talk in terms of uniformly, the fairness of it. There's not a split between substantive and procedural matters as you would like. If you read all the regulations, and it's suggesting that the regional officers are supposed to be doing essentially the same thing. So, I mean, the question that bothers us is, when you get one circuit saying one thing and you feel like you do not want to acquiesce or whatever it is you want to say, given all these regulations, don't you have an obligation to at least say to the world, here's the way we're going to handle this and why? We don't think the uniformity applies, or we don't acquiesce, or something.
And we don't see those regulations as having that role at all.
Well, then trust us that at least three of us up here are terribly worried about it, and they do seem to suggest uniformity. So if that's the premise, then what's your answer?
That
the regulations do say that the EPA is promising that there will be uniformity in enforcement of its regulations across the country, that all regional officers are going to do the same thing.
That EPA's, you know, officers will do their best to do...
the same thing. That's what the regulations say. They're going to be uniform. It uses that word, and it doesn't split it between procedural and substantive matters.
The distinction is not between procedural and substantive matters.
Well, that was
matters.
Your distinction. I didn't think it was a distinction either. That's what you said to us initially.
I think that the point is that statute imposed upon EPA a requirement to pass regulations. EPA
right.
bound itself in certain ways, yes, and it set up certain mechanisms that were with the intent of requiring greater uniformity. But it required adherence to procedures that were set into in its regulations. With respect to headquarters employees, there are certain procedures very specifically outlined. With respect to regional officers...
Let me put it this way, because your time is running out. What's the big deal if the court sends it back and say, you have to at least explain what you're doing? Like the petitioners say, maybe if you're not acquiescing, say that. Or you don't think this is a matter of uniformity because these cases... have so much flexibility in a manner, or something. What's the big deal if that happens?
We have concerns about the failure to have met a number of the jurisdictional requirements for review. Fundamentally, EPA needs to be able to communicate with folks about the status of ongoing matters without having it be reviewable action. That's a function an agency needs to fulfill without being asked to continually add on to
the burden. I think as a general proposition, none of us would disagree with that. That's probably right. But the problem is this was a big event. You had a regulation in place saying do X, and you had a circuit said no, X doesn't cut it. And then you responded by saying send out a note to all your regional offices, you know, forget the Sixth Circuit. Here's what we're going to continue to do. All right. So that's not the same as your conferring, the national office conferring with regional offices over interesting issues. You announce to the world, including those who are regulated, we are positively saying one part of the country is this and the rest of the country is that, without explanation. And I'm saying, what's the big deal if we send it back and say, you know, explain what you're doing?
And
you won't lose sleep over that, will you? It will not ruin your weekend, will it?
Me personally? Well, I think the answer I've given is the one that for us it is the reviewability of these kind of memoranda that is perturbing.
I agree that it's a very close question as to which kind of memorandum, and that we ought not be intruding in the business of the agency in communicating with its leaders. But I mean, this was a strange case.
And is it then that EPA is required? As the suggestion that EPA is required to follow the First Circuit
I raise those questions. No, you know what EPA could do is if you think these regulations are going too far, the agency could say, you know what, we're gutting all those uniformity regulations because the D.C. Circuit has mangled them and they're reading them incorrectly. And we can't do our business, and so we're going to have notice and comment, and those regulations are gone because we want to be able to non-acquiesce in appropriate cases.
You had another option here. The agency had another option that wouldn't have even required going that far, and that is the agency could have revised. All the Sixth Circuit did was to question the agency's interpretation of its own regulations. So the agency could have rewritten its regulation to build the functional interrelationship test into it and apply that uniformly. In other words, you aren't bound by the First Circuit that acted.
And
right?
I think the concern...
Do you agree with that?
Why? EPA has that option.
Okay, so then it's not the case. I know the plaintiffs here, the petitioners, want you to be bound. They want the result they want is a Sixth Circuit result. But that isn't the only result that is an option for the agency here.
I think the concern is the idea that every time there's a decision in one court, is it always at the circuit court, district court, that EPA then needs to implement nationwide regulation that it has to start rulemaking?
I was just asking you a question because you can change. It's an easy fix to change the regulation.
And set, sorry.
The Sixth Circuit simply said that your regulation didn't include the functional interrelationship test. That was an unreasonable reading of the reg. So you write it. They have lots of lawyers at the EPA. They can rewrite the reg. So it says that.
And include it, and then you're done.
And then you're finished, and then you have a uniform rule. And the point is that
then
that's right or wrong.
Then you wouldn't have to attack us either.
Yeah. It's that there's no explanation from the agency as to why they didn't do that here.
And I think the agency has that ability under SEC versus Chenery to decide to proceed under adjudications. And that flexibility and the advantages of that weighing in specific circumstances. This is a regulation that applies across all industries as they evolve over decades.
No, but
and it's trying to apply
that,
it.
That doesn't get you wrong. The adjudications are governed by existing norms.
Okay.
And the fight here is over the norm. The Sixth Circuit raised questions about it. And Judge Tatel is saying you can modify the norm.
Yeah.
I don't think
okay. Thank you. Did Mr. Garr have any time left? You could take 2 minutes if you think you need it.
If they say they're not acquiescing now, is it over? Are we done?
No, Your Honor. But I think, you know, we actually agree with you, Judge Tatel, that rulemaking was an option. The point is they had many ways to seek to fulfill their uniformity requirement, and they tried none of them.
Well, how do we handle this last point that counsel made, which is how do we, and that Judge Edwards was pursuing, which is how do we avoid intruding this court into sort of the daily operations of the EPA in its ability to communicate freely with its, give directions to its regional offices?
Well, I mean,
how do you distinguish this case from all the other, right? I mean,
well, of course, the EPA is free to communicate. They're free to advise the offices of the summit decision. But one thing that they're not free to do under their own regulations is to tell their regional offices across the country to apply two different standards in different parts of the country. That directly contravenes the uniformity mandate.
Well, that goes to the substance, but this is still the issue as to whether this is meaningfully distinguishable from just any in terms of rightness.
You're saying it's reviewable because it's unlawful.
You can make an argument
about anything they do.
Your Honor, it makes clear that they're going to apply one standard for the Sixth Circuit and one standard for the rest of the country. And that imposes the injury is the competitive imbalance that follows from that. And that's an immediate.
Yeah, but that can be raised in a case when the rule is applied.
Well,
see, I mean, it's a disturbing situation. And I think it really is nerve-wracking to think that we would start messing with agencies' communications of this sort, because you always have that substantive challenge if they applied the rule somewhere adversely to one of your clients, you can raise the point you're raising.
That's true, Judge Edwards, but the harm is the substantive consequences that flow from this communication, this directive, this rule, which does have legal impact.
I don't know what the harm is. What's the harm?
The harm is the competitive imbalance.
How do we know that? We don't know how it's going to be applied in any given case.
Well, Your Honor,
it's a factorial analysis, and in any given case, in or out of the Sixth Circuit, we don't know how it's going to be applied. I'm really nervous about our doing this kind of thing.
Your Honor, you know that they're going to apply different rules, assuming they follow their own directive, and the agency's giving you no indication that they haven't. From our perspective, the competitive injury is similar to the one this Court has identified.
But you see, on the one hand, you're saying that old rule that they applied, they were all over the place. Well, that works against you. If they were all over the place, that proves the point on ripeness, because you don't know how they're going to apply it. They announce, we're going to keep doing that thing. That thing to you is they're all over the place in that thing. So we don't know whether their application of the existing rule is somehow going to injure a client of yours, because you've already acknowledged that there are variations in how they do that. And they confirm that by saying the regional directors have discretion.
So
I don't see how you get past the rightness concern that she's raising.
Let me make 3 points on that quickly, Your Honor. The first is that this directive is new in telling all the regional offices to apply.
There are
apply
lots of things like
and,
that we say are not ripe.
And
lots of rules that we say, yeah, it's true, it has a sweeping coverage, but we don't know how that's going to be applied in any given case, and we say we're not going to deal with it. Now you wait for the real case to come to us.
Number two, Your Honor, the agency has applied this directive. They did it in rejecting this summit rule in the North Dakota Federal Implementation Plan, which is set forth in the briefs.
For which you can seek review.
And number three, Your Honor, we don't think that we have to wait for the individual permitting actions. There's certainly no need for any concrete facts. We're not making a challenge to any particular applications. We're talking about the competitive harm that follows from this rule, which requires the world to operate under two different permitting regimes.
It's a very hard argument when the rule we're talking about involves a lot of discretions in the hands of the enforcers and a factorial analysis. It's very hard.
Your Honor, there is no discretion in the directive about which standards will be applied.
I understand, but the standard itself is malleable. So to say follow X standard doesn't, to me, and listening to the two of you for 45 minutes, I'm not clear what it says. And so what? They said follow the old one, but the old one involves the exercise of discretion by regional directors, a factorial analysis, precisely the kind of cases we do not decide until there's been an application.
Okay, but what we know is different between the two standards is the functional interrelatedness is an inherently subjective standard. The permitting process is much longer. It's much more costly. That's precisely what happened in the Summit case where it took 5 years to permit, whereas our test, and again, this isn't about the merits of the rule, but if you're going to get into the harm that follows from one permitting regime versus the other, the literal adjacency, either it's contiguous or not, doesn't present those problems. So that's the harm that applies to our members today who have to live under the two different permitting requirements, obligations to permit under one way or the other, continuous renewal of permits. Even if you thought that that harm wasn't imminent today, and it sure is from our members' perspective, at a minimum we know there's a substantial likelihood of it. There's no question that everyone is permitting across the country. Permits are up for renewal. And this rule, which disrupts the competitive balance and puts members and companies in different situations, gives advantages to members within the Sixth Circuit or other companies within the circuits who don't have to go through that costly compliance process, who don't have to worry about submitting new permitting applications. There is a real direct competitive injury, similar to the one that the court identified recently in the Shirley versus Ceballos case, which dealt with grant applications, where even there the court said we don't have to wait for a specific grant application because we can say that this guidance is going to make that process more complicated, more costly. That's just as true here. And the last thing I would say on ripeness is we think that there's no more to the ripeness argument in this case as there was in the Appalachian Power case, and it's discussed in note 18 of that opinion where this court said there was nothing to that argument.
Okay.
Yep.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Case is submitted.